It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Josh Rawlerson, in for Paul Guggenheimer. We've been hearing a lot about 3D printers in the last few years, but until recently, it hasn't been easy to get your hands on one. That is, unless you're a researcher, a tech professional, or a fairly sophisticated hobbyist. That's changing quickly, however, as consumer-grade models hit the market at increasingly affordable prices. Meanwhile, businesses and nonprofits are working to make the technology more accessible. Just last week, the Home Depot chain announced plans to put 3D printers in a dozen of its stores. Customers there will be able to print up bits of hardware and other items on-site from custom designs. None of the stores in the pilot program are in the Pittsburgh area, at least not yet, but the barriers to entry have never been lower here, thanks to initiatives like the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh's Job and Career Education Center, which has just installed a MakerBot Replicator 2 unit at its main branch in Oakland. Senior librarian Wes Roberts runs the program and joins us now to talk about it. Wes, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me.
In case there's anybody listening right now who doesn't know what 3D printing is, how it works, can you give us a quick rundown on the technology itself?
Sure. Whenever I do a workshop on 3D printing, I like to discuss the fact that 3D printing is kind of the popular way of thinking about it. Another way of thinking about it is by calling it additive manufacturing. And that kind of explains what it's doing. It's taking a material. In our case, with our 3D printer, it's a type of plastic. And it melts that plastic and it builds an object from the material in layers. And so you have a fully designed object. I should point out, too, that object comes from a digital file and give that to the machine to produce.
So the technology to do this has been around for a while, but these devices are still pretty pricey at this stage, correct?
Yeah. The big company that you hear about a lot is MakerBot, and they've begun producing different machines. They've had the Replicator 2, which was their standard model. That's what we have. They now have a smaller version. What I hear is that with patents expiring and more companies getting on board, more technologies getting cheaper, they will come down into the hundreds of dollars range.
Is that going to happen soon?
I can't really say, but I would maybe guess within a year to 2 years.
Wow.
Coming from kind of an educated guess.
That's going to make a big difference, I would think.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I want to get back to that in a moment, but the printer is part of the career education program, which
right.
you manage for the library.
Yep.
Where does the technology and the way you're using it fit into the library's vision for economic development in the region?
I got the printer through a grant, and in that grant, I focused on adult education because that's what my department specifically focuses on at this time. And what I was going for was providing access to education in this new realm of digital manufacturing. So that was the whole crux, was to get people connected. We do a lot of classes on general computing, Microsoft Office, but to bring them to this higher tier of creative design, the idea was to welcome people to that kind of new world of technology.
So the thinking is that by just becoming familiar with the technology, getting used to playing around with it, you'll get some kind of preparation for these jobs that we're hearing about that are going unfilled because people don't have the skills. Is that right?
That was basically the idea, yeah. And it kind of evolved from there because once I got it and I started using it, and I've been to tech shop and I've been to these places that are really involved in this type of work, I like to think of it as a kind of cultural empowerment that it provides as well. Because when you're at these kind of maker spaces and you're seeing all the stuff going on around you, you feel like you're part of something bigger. And so this 3D printer at the library is, you know, our little slice of introducing people to that new world and making them part of something bigger.
So even though the focus is to some degree on adult education, there will be opportunities for people of all ages to just sort of have fun with it, I would think.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So there's the education component, and there's a lot of discussion about play in terms of creating things, and we're reaching into that for the adult side. We have a very well-established and excellent children's and teen services that work in this area. Our teen labs are just fantastic. I've been taking the 3D printer out to some branches and we're doing some teen programs. So we are expanding into those other age groups as well.
Where are kids that age at with this technology?
Some Pittsburgh public schools have it. Some of them are just amazingly familiar with it already. Some of them are just so excited about it. So there's a lot of excitement at that level.
So thinking forward as the technology matures, and it sounds like it's happening at an incredibly rapid rate, you mentioned we're looking at very affordable consumer-grade desktop printing mm-hmm. technology within the next couple of years. I'm wondering how the library's role will change. Like, will I someday be able to download a file that I can print stuff up at home the way I can with some other things the library offers?
Well, that's a possibility. Right now, there's been a lot of interest in the fact that we have this printer and we're working on ways to give people access to it. So, you know, right now, the way we're approaching it is we're providing workshops, mm-hmm. educational workshops, as I've been doing. And we are beginning to try to address people's need and desire to print things of their own. So we're going to try that, and we're going to work toward creating some workshops where people can learn how to do some of the designing as well. So moving forward, it's at a pretty beginning stage with this technology, mm-hmm. but I think we've got a really good groundwork for what we're doing with our children's and our teen programs so that we'll keep building on it for the adult level and really kind of merge them all together.
When you run the workshops, I assume you have a library of files that you make available, and maybe yeah. people are able to kind of modify them and experiment with them. Who generates those?
Well, at this point, a lot of the files are available online. There's a website called Thingiverse, mm-hmm. and that is what MakerBot supports. So that's a lot of open source files that people can take and modify and just print however they'd like. Personally, I've been using Thingiverse a lot. I have a few colleagues who are pretty good with the design end, and we've made some stuff and we've played around with it. For our workshops, we focus a lot on stuff that's pre-made so we can have something readily available. And that we know will work because there is a strong experimental phase involved with getting something to print properly.
Right.
We do, again, want to have some workshops where we throw in that design element where there's a program we're thinking of borrowing from another library where you might design a cookie cutter mm-hmm. and then print it, and then you could have a final product.
On Thingiverse, I've heard of it. I'm not super familiar, though. Mm-hmm. Are these designs Creative Commons licensed or something equivalent so
yeah.
that people can adapt them?
Yeah, pretty much. So actually, I brought this with me, which is a RoboHand. And the RoboHand is Thingiverse, and it's something that's become popular talking about prosthetics and the power of 3D printing mm-hmm. to create prosthetic limbs.
Right. Which, I think I was hearing something about, is it Africa where somebody is making prosthetics in a rural clinic someplace where...
That sounds about right, yeah.
And,
when you're looking at something that's $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 and you could print something like this for $10, it's a pretty radical innovation in that way.
So we're still at some assembly required stage.
Yeah, absolutely.
With this,
so that's about 6 different prints all pieced together.
And I know you've got some opportunities planned for patrons to come in and learn more about 3D printing and get some hands-on time with the equipment. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, there's been some demand recently, so I've scheduled a few workshops over the next few weeks. We have one on July 25th at 2 p.m., another on August 4th starting at 5:45, and one on August 12th at 10:15. They're all about 2 hours long.
Are other libraries pursuing similar initiatives as yours?
Yeah, there are a lot of other libraries throughout the country that have been getting 3D printers, and so it's become a pretty popular thing. In the beginning, I was a little skeptical, but once you have it in front of you and you realize how big the movement around this is becoming, I lost that skepticism. I'm a pretty full convert at this point.
You talk like a maker. You sound like somebody that's
getting there.
That's in on this. I wonder if you worry about this being sort of early days. The parallels to me to the early internet mm-hmm. are striking. And when I think about everything that happened with the entertainment industry, publishing industry over the last decade or so, and certainly the Carnegie Library, like all libraries, is grappling with those issues now, mm-hmm. is there going to be some conflict or difficulty around rights issues, IP kind of stuff in the future?
Yeah, I mean, that stuff's definitely evolving right now. I think it's in an infant phase with where the legal issues will go, but there's a lot of discussion. The American Library Association has begun discussing how do libraries approach this? What kind of policies do we put in place? Because there are copyright and patent issues that you have to address. And that's something we've taken into account with what we'll do if we print something for someone. We're not going to be mass producing Star Wars figures for people.
Right.
So you do have to take into account the legal reality of these things for sure.
But maybe you could be printing Space Battles knockoff equivalent products under an appropriate license?
Who knows?
Yeah,
might take too long anyway.
Wes Roberts, thanks for joining us today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Senior librarian Wes Roberts runs the Job and Career Education Center at the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh, where 3D printing workshops are being offered starting this week. And you can find out more at carnegielibrary.org. You're listening to Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Josh Rollerson, sitting in for Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking today about 3D printing and about new opportunities for people in the Pittsburgh area to get up close and personal with it. Of course, these days, the city is full of startup companies that are working to mainstream a technology that most people haven't yet had a chance to play around with. If you visited the Squirrel Hill location of S.W. Randall Toys lately, though, you may have encountered the work of one such startup. Pittsburgh-based Peacemaker Technologies makes 3D printing kiosks, specially designed for toy stores, where customers can create custom toys and novelty items on the spot. Arden Rosenblatt is Peacemaker's co-founder and CEO. Arden, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Good morning.
So walk me through the user experience with one of your machines. I walk into a toy store, I see this touchscreen rig set up. What happens next?
The goal of the kiosk is to get everyone printing and designing. So you walk up and there's a touchscreen with lots of preloaded designs, and then you start to make it your own. You add colors, add text, personalize images, mix and match. Whatever it is you're making, there's toys, there's some jewelry, there's small gifts, housewares. And then you finalize it, and it gets 3D printed for you right in the store.
And it pops out across the room, and you pay at the front.
Yeah, so behind the counter, they have a 3D printer. The file gets sent over automatically, and in a couple seconds, you can walk over and watch it fire up.
So you said creating and designing. From what I've seen, this seems like you've gone out of your way to make it very user-friendly, touchscreen kind of drag and drop. So you're not digging into the whatever the CAD stuff that would be at the back end. But you see this as leading kind of in that direction. Is there an educational component to what you're doing?
Well, a lot of what we do is try and jump the technology gap and get all the people that haven't seen 3D printing, give them a fun way to give it a try, and also to make a special piece for them. The end product's a big part of it. But a big part of what we do is we want to make it very easy and accessible and reliable, of course, because it's going in a store. So building those files, making sure it works, making sure it's good content is a lot of what we do. It's a big focus of our business.
And you specialize in building these rigs for toy stores specifically. Why toys?
Well, the system is designed for retail. We're starting with toy stores because it's a great fit for us. We use the same ABS plastic that a lot of toys, like the construction toys out there, use. It's a fun sort of shopping experience. And so we felt that toy stores were a perfect fit. They're all about showing their customers a great experience. They love selling fun products, and they've been very welcoming to us.
What other kinds of retail outlets do you see this being placed in?
We believe this is great for all sorts of accessories, really anywhere that you want to make a personal statement that pulling items off a shelf is not going to do it. So some of the near-term goals include accessories for maybe electronics, like something like a phone case. Houseware is a good one. And then down the road, I mean, as this thing becomes more and more complex, you can actually start to take chunks of a store's inventory. You know, you can imagine putting 5 rows of Home Depot into a digital box.
So I think they're doing exactly that. I can see how this makes sense at this moment for the stores that you're pitching this to as a strategy to drive foot traffic to brick and mortar establishments. I wonder like what the long range plan is, though. Is there a worry that the novelty is going to wear off at some point, or maybe that people will have the ability to do this in their home? What's the pitch then? What's the appeal of?
Well, we'd love to see everyone printing in their home one day. Unfortunately, the reality is it's not that easy for a lot of reasons. The machines are not quite there. We have to do a lot of custom work on these machines to get employees using them easily and reliably. The design is a very tough part. There's this dream of, hey, I want to, you know, to use a dumb example, I need a fork, let's 3D print a fork.
Right.
But unless you have the file, you have to go design it, you have to iterate it, you got to make sure this thing works. And the truth is that's not a fun process for many, many items. So we try and bring it to customers through retail, hoping one day the tools are out there, the libraries are out there. But we feel we can get it to many, many, many people very quick. This great technology, maybe not to make everything, but to help utilize some of those advantages, to help them tell their story better, to share their feelings, to just have cool stuff.
Are we looking to a day when for just any, you name it, retail store, this would just be part of the equipment they would have to fill, you know, gaps in their inventory, like they're out of forks, they can spit one out under the counter and sell it to you.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think 3D printing is going to replace mass production anytime soon, but I do believe it's going to complement it in a lot more situations than people give it credit for.
So, and you're, as you said, doing the legwork on the design, so it's ready to go for the consumer. Who's doing the designs? Is it so far just you guys in-house, or are you working with developers outside?
We build some in-house. We're always interested in artists who'd like to get their work out there. And we also partner with a couple companies in the industry that help feed us good content.
Okay.
And then we go in-house. We make sure it works. We make it customizable. We make it what it needs to be for retail system.
And in the last interview, we got a little bit into rights issues that the library has to deal with, and that's something they've been up against in other areas for a while now. But is that something that's on your plate? How do you work around potential problems with patents and copyrights and so on? I mean, I noticed that you guys have what look an awful lot like Lego blocks in your design.
It's not a big issue for us by design because we need to build our own content, but we probably would anyway. We don't use anyone else's designs, which wouldn't be right. It's a much bigger concern, I think, for those companies and the home users, because that's kind of the wild west of the internet, and people can do that. Of course, they're sensitive to that. So, for instance, Lego, they have all the trademarks, that property. They don't have patents on the bricks. So, you know, they maintain their image by having their parts fit well, they're well made, they have a great brand. I mean, they're very conscious of the fact that people could 3D print Legos.
So they're implicitly okay with that, it sounds like.
I don't know if I'd say they're okay with it. I think it's just, I think they appreciate the reality of the situation. But that being said, we see ourselves not as a competitor to companies like that, but as a complement. So we, for instance, we would call it a brick plaque, but we make a plaque and it has the bumps on the top and the holes in the bottom, and it works with any of those pieces, but you can add your name and designs and same deal. You know, you don't buy 100 and make a set of these. You would go buy a Lego set or whatever it is and then sort of make that set your own with our one accessory. And that's the relationship we want to create with these kind of guys, more symbiotic than competitive.
So if people want to see your product in action, they can visit SW Randall in Squirrel Hill. Are you rolling out to other locations anytime soon?
Yes, we're at SW Randall Forbes Avenue, and then actually in a week we'll be in Playthings, Etc. in Butler, up north a little. So they're having a kickoff party next weekend, and we're really excited to be there.
And you can find more on all of this at peacemaker.com, and that's P-I-C-E, correct?
P-I-E-C-E, M-A-K-E-R, yeah, that's correct, peacemaker.com.
And we'll have a link to that on our website at wesa.fm. Arden Rosenblatt, thanks for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much.
Coming up, author Jonathan Auxier has book recommendations for young readers to enjoy this summer. That's when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.